Hello and welcome to This Week I Learned, your audio guide to the most surprising discoveries and fascinating studies of the week. I'm your host, Lauren Hansen. This week I learned that skipping your morning coffee plays havoc on your memory. Researchers out of the University of Tasmania found that the sheer longing for that morning fix can be so powerful that it can impair your ability to memorize new information. For this study, researchers recruited 55 regular coffee drinkers. These were folks who consumed at least one coffee per day and who also found themselves thinking about when they would get their next cup. So pretty serious coffee drinkers. The participants were split into two groups. One half acted as the control group. They were allowed to drink their coffee as usual at the beginning of the day. And before the challenge began, the control group was told to help themselves to water whenever they liked and to imagine their favorite holiday. This imagination exercise was supposed to elicit a feeling similar to craving. The other group was put into a state of serious coffee craving. Not only were they told to refrain from drinking their morning cup of coffee, but they were also teased with a French press coffee pot nearby, and even told to pay attention to the coffee, to smell it, and to note its dark, nutty brown color. Then the memory challenge began. The whole group was told to memorize 100 unrelated word pairs, things like pond and book. Then they were tested on their ability to recall the second half of those pairs, so they'd be given pond and they'd have to say book to get it right. They were also tested on their recognition memory, which was basically like a multiple choice test to select the second word of each pair. And researchers found the control group significantly outperformed the coffee-craving group, both on recall and recognition memory. What's going on here is that cravings set a person on a path of consumption. It's all they can think about. But if that consumption doesn't come, then they start actively depleting cognitive resources to restrain that original plan of consumption, which means you have fewer cognitive resources for other important tasks. One interesting finding from the study was that participants were unaware of how coffee cravings had affected them. So when the craving group was asked to estimate how well they thought they would do on the memory tests, they were overly confident and less able to judge the accuracy of their answers than the control group. So if you're a regular coffee drinker, do your brain a favor and have that cup when you want it. This week I learned that swordfish heat up their eyeballs to hunt in cold water. Swordfish enjoy the dark depths of the ocean, swimming nearly 1,000 feet below the surface. Down here, temperatures can hover just a few degrees above freezing. But it can be scarce of food. What swordfish do come across is often extremely fast and highly maneuverable prey, things like large flying squid, for example. So swordfish should be at a disadvantage, but evolution has come to the rescue in a very cool, or maybe I should say warm, way. Even in ocean temperatures of 3 degrees Celsius, swordfish warm their eyes and brain to between 19 degrees and 28 degrees Celsius. Now, this is something researchers actually knew about large ocean predators. In fact, tuna and some sharks do it too. But this is the first study that found a convincing biological explanation for why. A team at the University of Queensland, Australia, took freshly caught swordfish and immediately removed their retinas. Then they varied the temperature of the retinas, cooling them to just 5 degrees or warming them to as much as 25 degrees Celsius or somewhere in between. Researchers also exposed the retinas to flashing lights of different frequencies and intensities, and this was to mimic potential prey. And what they found was that the temperature had a huge impact on the retina's ability to distinguish between individual light flashes. While it's not clear how keeping the eyes and brain warmer prevents a deterioration of vision, Researchers think that the temperature drop affects the transmission speed in nerves and other necessary neurochemical processes. So, in effect, slowing the eye reaction time down. Researchers estimate that warmer eyes could improve a swordfish's eyesight by 7 times. What's really cool, though, is how this came about. It seems that one part of a swordfish's eye muscle has been adapted to produce heat instead of move the eye around. This muscle warms up the blood and then moves the blood toward the eye and the brain. These warm eyeballs pick up fast movements in the water, which significantly increases the swordfish's chance of getting a meal in this veritable underwater desert. This week I learned that African wild dogs are a democratic species, but they have a funny way of showing it. They'll cast their vote with a sneeze. Now, it's not unique for social pack-traveling animals to hold democratic quorums. Meerkats, for example, have regular quorums around foraging, moving, and protection, and they've developed different vocalizations for each situation. But the sneezing as a form of communication seems to be unique to these African wild dogs, which are endangered. At first, researchers thought the sneezing was just a way to clear the nasal passage, but there was just so much sneezing that researchers had to see what else was going on there. So they studied 5 packs of African wild dogs living in different areas of Botswana. They found that the dogs have these periods of rest after a big hunt. And then when their rest period is over, the packs will hold these really boisterous greeting ceremonies that are called social rallies. The rallies are meant to reinforce social bonds. So you'll see the dogs frenetically touch heads and wag tails and dash side by side. But these social rallies are also opportunities for group decision making. So after those first few minutes of greeting, the group gets down to business, deciding if the pack should move on to hunt or stay put. It appears that one dog initiates the vote session with a sneeze, and other dogs would follow. Sometimes the rallies would then dissolve into more lazing around, indicating that the pack had decided to stay, and other times the pack up and moved. Researchers recorded details from 68 of these social rallies, and they found that the more sneezes that occurred, the more likely the pack moved off and started to hunt. What's interesting was that when one of the dominant male or female dogs kicked off the sneezing, it took only a few sneezes from other dogs, about 3 or so, for the pack to move on. But if it was a non-dominant dog that started the sneezing, it took much more, about 10 or so, for the collective to mosey. These findings reveal an otherwise unknown complexity to the social lives of these wild dogs. You see, they otherwise carry themselves like an autocracy, with the alpha male and female ruling the roost. But the sneezes add a level of democracy to their decision-making. This week I learned that Häagen-Dazs ice cream does not hail from Denmark. It's from the Bronx. The ice cream company was founded in 1961 by Reuben and Rose Mattis. The Mattises were a Jewish couple originally from Poland, though they did not meet there. They emigrated to the U.S. separately in 1921. They actually met while teenagers on the streets of Brownsville, Brooklyn. Reuben had been peddling homemade Italian ices out of a horse and wagon, going from bodega to bodega in the summers in the South Bronx neighborhood where he lived with his widowed mother, and then Rose after they married. By the 1930s, Reuben began experimenting with ice creams, buying books and testing out different recipes to find something that actually tasted good. The business was slow going until 1959, when Reuben was struck by a stroke of genius. His family ice cream, he thought, should have a special name, something that indicated it was different, evocative, better. Reuben and Rose sat around their apartment spitballing names. And according to Atlas Obscura, Reuben had always admired Denmark. for the country's treatment of Danish Jews during World War II. So he tried out Danish-sounding names until he found one he liked. But Haagen-Dazs doesn't mean anything in Danish, or any other language for that matter. And the umlaut over the second A was also a Reuben original. Umlauts do not exist in the Danish language. But Reuben wanted something that sounded cold, clear, luxurious, and, well, Danish. So Haagen-Dazs was born. He plopped a picture of Denmark on the carton and sold it at a premium, 75 cents a pint compared to just 52 cents by competitors. But Reuben was right. Haagen-Dazs quickly gained a reputation as a luxurious ice cream. It did help that good ice cream was in short order at the time. The frozen treat had become this sort of artificial-tasting cold shell of its former self, more air filler and fake sweeteners than anything you could really name. So Reuben went in the opposite direction, using more butterfat in his ice cream than government standards required. The result was a dense, richly textured luxury ice cream with this mysterious, foreign-sounding name. By 1973, Haagen-Dazs was distributed nationally. Reuben and Rose sold their company in 1983. Reuben passed away in 1994, and Rose followed in 2006. But their mass-marketed brand with the funny name remains one of the top-selling ice cream brands in the world. And that does it for this episode of This Week I Learned. Look out for new episodes every Friday on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to read more about any of the facts I've mentioned, you can check out theweek.com/podcasts, where you'll also find our 7-Minute Opinions and 7-Minute Explainer series. And if you've come across any fascinating scientific tidbits, new studies, or historic revelations that you'd like to share, email me. You can reach me at podcasts@theweek.com. Both singular and plural will get you there. Just put podcasts in the subject. And as a thank you for listening to this episode, we'd like to offer you 4 risk-free issues of The Week magazine. To get those, visit theweek.com/4free. I'm Lauren Hansen, and thank you so much for listening.